really mean that? I don't understand. We aren't even in the fields yet, you say.
Yes, we are, Mr. Wells.
We're talking about them growing, and she's already picked them, and we have a big bowl of hot peas with warm butter drizzled all over them. That's what we have.
Yes, Mr. Wells, in July, where fields are covered with snow. And, Mr. Wells, you need to emphasize the word in.
Why? That doesn't make any sense. I've never heard anyone who emphasized the word in. There's no known way in the English language where you begin a sentence with the word in and then emphasize it.
Yes.
Yes, always. We're already past that. In fact, get me a jury and show me where you say in July and I will sing a song for you. That is absolutely idiotic. This is just stupid. Impossible. Meaningless. I'd love to know just how you would emphasize in July.
Then let's change that to every July.
No. You don't really mean every July, do you? Who said that?
I did.
Who the hell are you? Now I have two directors telling me how to read in July. That's bad copy. Of course it's every July.
We should move on to the next commercial.
This is crazy. You don't know what I'm up against. This is quite weary. It is all quite unpleasant. And I thought we'd done these spots before. In fact, I distinctly remember recording them before.
You did, Mr. Wells. The sponsor wants fresh takes.
Fresh takes? What on earth for? I'm Orson Welles. I did it right the first time. Why waste my time and their money with a useless exercise?
I'm not sure. Sales said to just get it done.
Sales? Sales? They are as bad as lawyers. I swear, if they could turn a buck, they would shake a tambourine and strum a banjo to make a sale. Well, they care if they're wasting my time.
Mr. Wells, we really do need to finish these up.
Here, under protest, is beef burgers. Hello, I'm Orson Welles. We know a little place in the American Far West where a man named Charlie Biggs, who chops up the finest prairie-fed sirloin beef for burgers. This is a bunch of crap, you know that, don't you?
Actually, Mr. Wells, you missed a word there.
What word?
Beef.
Oh, come on, fellas. You are both losing your heads here. I wouldn't direct a living actor like this in Shakespeare. The way you do this is impossible.
Mr. Wells, the right reading for this?
I am giving the right reading here. I spend 20 times more doing these commercials for you than I do anyone else. And on top of it, you are such pests. Now, I have two directors telling me what to do. I don't even like it when one director gets in my sights. The way you want this stupid commercial read is impossible. Simply impossible.
Mr. Wells, you did 6 of these for us last year.
Seems more like 72. What is it that you want in the depth of your ignorance? What it is, I cannot and will not deliver. All the money in the world will not be worth what you're putting me through.
Mr. Wells, we still need to re-record the first one you did 2 hours ago.
Why? There was nothing wrong with that one. Why are you putting me through this? One more word out of you, and then you go. Now, why are you being so unbearable at doing this one again? I take direction in a protest, and not from two. Now, I do all this under protest.
That one had a gunk.
What is a gunk? Do you mind telling me?
It's a bang from outside.
A bang from outside. Yes, indeed, outside. And it's time for me to be outside. Good day.
Good morning. This is the office of Orson Welles. This is Jeanette speaking. How may I help you?
Hello, Jeanette. This is Orson Welles.
It's about time you called me.
Jeanette, this is Orson Welles, and I sprained my ankle.
The WGTD Radio Theater is on the air. Show number 104, and this our 12th season. So sit back and enjoy another installment of The Kane Shadow in A Rear Window Murder. Today we broadcast live from Lake Lawn Resort on beautiful Delavan Lake in Delavan, Wisconsin. The Cane Shadow is created and written by Stephen Brown and Michael Ulstrup, and stars members from the 91.1 Players. Today's show is directed by Janelle Powers. As always, support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of Aaliyah, Dumais, and McTernan, the Lake Lawn Resort in Delavan, Wisconsin, and the Brown Ulstrup Performing Arts Foundation. And now, The Cane Shadow.
You what?
I sprained my ankle. Badly, it seems.
How can you get back to Los Angeles with a sprained ankle? You barely fit into the airline seats the way it is, even in first class. And now you'll have to deal with your ankle?
That's just it, dear Janine. The doctor ordered me to stay here for a few weeks.
I'll make the hotel reservation.
Oh, no need, sweet Jeanette. I checked with some good friends here in Powers Lake, and I'll be staying at their home.
You're staying at some kind of lake cottage in the middle of nowhere? Does it even have indoor plumbing?
Oh, it has indoor plumbing. Caring, Jeanette. No worries.
So, who are these friends?
Dr. Carson Bluestone.
A doctor?
Pull your claws back, Miss Jeanette.
Mary?
He's taken. I'm not sure if he and his partner have actually tied the knot.
Like they say, all the good ones are either married or gay.
Well, I'm neither.
Well, I said the good ones.
Oh, yes. Always the joker.
Whatever. Listen, I'm going to be on the next flight out there. You'll need someone to take care of you.
Oh, no, my dear, sweet Jeanette. I can take care of myself quite well out here. The house here is quite nice, amazingly nice. I mean, not quite as nice as my home in Los Angeles, of course, but still very nice. I have restaurants sending me food. The bar is well stocked. There really is
Power
no
Lake,
need.
Dr. Carson Bluestone, expect me.
Oh, doesn't that just make my day? Then again, as much as Jeanette can drive me up a wall, I had to admit I was glad she was going to come out here. With both of us here, without the disturbances of L.A., I might finally get a few things that done that eluded me for the last several months. And it's not as though we'd bump into each other in this house. It was a very large, almost palatial. The first floor was spacious with a huge living room and adjoining cooking area right off the foyer. It could easily accommodate a small cocktail party of, say, 50 people. That area opened up to a lower level patio overlooking the lake. Outdoor built-in grill, wet bar, pizza oven, of course. From the patio, you walked to a staircase that descended to the boathouse and pier where were docked the speedboat and pontoon boat. Plenty of spaces, too, for the watercraft of guests. I was spending my time on the second floor, a cozier quarters. It was more like an apartment, a small living room, a kitchen, which opened up to an upper patio covered with a monstrous A-frame steel awning. The view from there overlooked the lake, the beautifully manicured side yard, and the adjoining properties. Evenings up there were very pleasant on the upper patio, lighting the outdoor fireplace, hearing a low speedboat motor pass through the western bay of Power Lake. I really had no idea how many bedrooms or baths were in this house. Carson said I was welcome to use the movie theater in the lower level, which, of course, I graciously thanked him for, but really, I live in Los Angeles. Do I really need to see movies that are months old? After all, I am Orson Welles. I noticed the neighbors to the north, a young couple, two little girls, some kind of a hunting dog frolicking with the children. The husband always seemed busy working on projects in the backyard. The wife, tending to the very colorful flower gardens, at least the ones, many gardens that the well-shaded yard would permit. I did once notice an older man stopping over. during these fall days, with sun streaming down through the glowing golden leaves. It was all quite idyllic for those last 36 hours, but then that's when you know who showed up.
Mr. Wells, it's me, Jeanette. Mr. Wells?
Who are you?
Marge.
And what's a Marge?
Mr. Wells' physical therapist.
Mr. Wells' physical therapist? Mr. Wells, where are you?
He's upstairs.
Sheesh, this is a big house.
And so it starts. Why is there never an alien UFO ready to abduct me when I need one? I'm up here, Jeanette.
Where up here?
Out on the patio.
Sheesh! This doctor is some doctor. I mean, this is quite the lake cottage. What kind of doctor is he?
Surgical oncologist.
Figures. So, why is this physical therapist here?
Marge is here to help me with walking, making sure I know how to not fall, working on my ankle, etc., etc.
Whatever. So, where do I sleep? I have to unpack and get things sorted out here.
Well, I have one of the bedrooms up here on this floor. Why don't you take one of the bedrooms on the first floor?
Fine.
Mr. Wells, we really should do that second round of physical therapy. You don't want that leg to atrophy.
Marge, I feel sorry for you. How do you get him to do any physical activity?
I keep the Cabernet out of his reach. He has to walk to get anything.
Marge, I think we're going to get along just fine.
Marge, I think we're going to get along just fine. Jeanette, just get settled in. We have work to do. Don't think you're on some kind of a vacation.
You know, you really are messing up this yard. I had everything pretty much done for the winter, and now you start this.
Well, Jack, the kids want this soccer net put up. They both joined some kind of soccer team at school, and it was me who got the yard ready for the winter. Putting up a soccer net isn't going to hurt anything. It'll be down before the first snow.
My... what's going on down there?
Why my daughter ever married you is beyond me. You really had some kind of spell over her. But I could see right through you.
Hey, Jack, let's just cool this down. I don't want the girls to see their grandpa and dad arguing.
Oh, and what? Know that the dad is a lazy bum?
Wow, that was something. That younger guy just stormed off.
Now, Jeanette, it's really none of our business.
Hey, you never know. It can get weird down here in the hinterland.
No more weird than in L.A., let me assure you. Now, please, Marge, could you please start my therapy? And Jeanette, sweet Jeanette, could you please start working? Jeanette and I were just finishing up for the day when the neighbor came to call.
Excuse me, do you mind if I pay a visit?
Not at all. The staircase is on the other side of the patio. Cody bound up the stairs. He was wearing jeans, hooded sweatshirt, running shoes. He was good-looking, goatee, dark hair, sort of a lanky, athletic build. Not exactly a refined look, but I could see why women would find him attractive. He had a firm handshake.
How do you do? I'm Cody.
Hello, I'm Orson Welles.
Orson Welles? Really?
Yes, really. I am Orson Welles.
Wait till my wife hears this. We love your movies, and we even listen to the Mercury Theater.
Well, thank you. I do what I can. Here, have a seat. Make yourself comfortable.
Oh, thank you. It's quite a view from up here.
Yes, indeed. I'm fortunate to have good friends here who let me stay here while my ankle is healing.
Yeah. Okay. I feel sort of weird coming up here, but I did want to apologize.
Apologize? For what?
Well, for all the noise when my father-in-law and I were arguing.
Oh, no need to apologize for something like that. We all have our family challenges.
I suppose. I just don't remember my grandfather arguing with my dad like this.
I take it this arguing is not a new thing.
No. This is not a new thing at all. It started well before Joan and I were even married.
But she married you anyway. You have to feel good about that.
Oh, sure. I've been in love with Joan since we were high school sweethearts. But even then, her dad never liked me. Always thought I was a bad influence, that I would never amount to anything.
I suppose most fathers feel that way about the young man who court their daughters.
Yeah, I guess. But this guy actually moved his whole family to Illinois to get away from me.
What has been his concern? You get in some kind of trouble?
No, that's just it. I don't get it. I do think he just thought Joan was marrying down. She went to college and became a teacher. I went to tech school to learn auto mechanics, like I'm not good enough for his daughter.
But you seem to do okay. You seem to have a nice little family.
Thank you. I love my family. Being a husband and father has been one of the greatest things ever. I just wish Jack would simmer down.
And he doesn't like what you're doing to your lake house.
No, it's not ours. It's his. We come out here most weekends. We only live in Gurnee, so we're not all that far. Joan works at one of the grade schools there, and I work at one of the dealerships.
Oh, okay, I see.
And all I'm doing is what Joan wants me to do.
Well, you seem pretty handy with tools and all. You know your way around landscaping and carpentry.
Thanks. I do like working with my hands, seeing things take shape and come together.
Well, Cody, I just say, you keep doing what you're doing. He may just come around.
Yeah, I suppose. I just wish he would shut up for good. But say, I've taken up enough of your time. Again, I'm sorry for all the drama.
Yeah, thanks for stopping by.
The next few days went well. Uneventful. Jeanette and I shoveled through quite a bit of a backlog of work that we've been waiting for us. I'm just so in demand for movie directing and even little radio commercials. It really does get to be overwhelming, and that doesn't even begin to get at all the movie and television scripts that await my perusal and critique. Of course, there was the occasional argument between Jack and Cody next door. A few more pieces of the puzzle came together late one afternoon. I was out back on the upper patio reading True Grit. It was a Kenosha County big read selection. Everyone in the county and all the schools were reading the book. It had been years since I read the novel, and I thought it would make some good afternoon reading in the autumn sunshine.
You have a visitor.
A visitor? Rodney!
Hi there, Mr. Wells.
To what do I owe this pleasure?
Mr. Wells, it's all over the area that you banged up your ankle and you're staying here. I thought I'd stop in and say hi.
Looks like you intend to stay for a few days with that suitcase you brought.
Not quite, Mr. Wells. The contents of this suitcase are more to your liking. Let me show you.
Rodney, you are indeed a lifesaver.
I thought you'd approve. I saw the suitcase with holders of a fifth of whiskey, two glasses, a jigger, and a small ice bucket, and I thought of you right away. I didn't bring the ice. I figured you'd have plenty of that.
Indeed I do. Jeanette, could you bring out...
Yeah, I figured when Rodney showed up that whiskey was involved. He also brought you dinner.
Oh, Rodney, you didn't have to do that.
No, I had no choice, Mr. Riz. Gerard at the Frontier Restaurant at Lake Lawn Resort insisted that I bring out a complete prime rib dinner for you.
Oh, that Gerard, always the best host. He runs a great place there at Lake Lawn. Are you working there, Rodney?
I do pick up some hours, dear. With being retired, it's not as though I have to, but I do enjoy talking with the patrons and, you know, keeping up with the, news.
I like the way you think, Rodney. Well, why don't you pour us some drinks? I always talk better over a cocktail.
Everyone talks better over cocktails, Mr. Wells. Here you go, Mr. Wells.
Thank you, Rodney. Cheers.
Why are you tearing up my lawn?
Joan wants a flower bed for some mum plants. She and the girls want to make some kind of display for fall.
I just don't see why you have to tear up my yard to do this. Can't they put some stupid mums where the grass is already torn up?
Hey, Jack, I'm just doing what the girls want. It'll look nice when they get done with it.
If you'd be more of a man, you wouldn't be led around by my daughter.
Jack, why don't you go back in the house and have another drink?
So, this is where Jack's house is.
You know him?
Oh, sure. He's a regular customer at the restaurant. I knew he lived on Powers Lake. I just never knew exactly where.
His son-in-law was here the other day apologizing for all the arguing.
That's nothing new. Jack is known for picking fights with his son-in-law. Cody, I think it is, right in the restaurant. Once, he did it right in front of his granddaughters. Seemed like a real lout.
Does Cody do anything?
Not really. His wife and he will try to get Jack to quiet down. Not always successful with that. Cody just keeps it all inside. I suppose he doesn't want to make more of a scene. His wife is usually able to contain her father.
Is Jack a drinker?
Yes, a bitter one. The first place he stops is at the restaurant, is at the bar for a few pops before he sits at the table where he'll have a few more cocktails for dinner. He gets sort of mean, too.
Is Jack married?
Not anymore. I guess he and his wife split up years ago over his temper, I guess. She got the house on the Lake Villa, and he got the lake house.
Any kind of abuse?
Never heard of any. Never came up at the divorce hearings.
It didn't seem to affect his relationship with his daughter.
No, but I always get the impression that she's a bit more calculating than she puts on. But what do I know?
Rodney, you know a lot. Calculating, you say?
Yeah, just a feeling I get. Once in a while, it almost seems like she eggs her on her father. Like she wants to start something between her dad and her husband.
Why would she do that?
Don't know. But there must be something that is going on in the background that we don't know.
Yes, I get the impression, too, that there's something going on under the surface.
Say, Marge is here for your therapy.
I best be going.
Oh, then. Please stay, Rodney. Take a boat out of the while I am being tortured.
No, I have to get over to the frontier. Get ready for the dinner crowd.
No rest for the weary, huh? Well, thank you for stopping by. And the first place I go to when I get around better is the frontier. As long as you're my bartender.
That's a deal, Mr. Wales. And enjoy that prime rib that Gerard sent over. He sent over a bottle of Cabernet, too.
Bless that man. Take care, Rodney.
Bye, Mr. Wales.
Show Marge out here to the patio. It's a nice day, and I'd prefer to have witnesses to her torture.
I heard that.
What's on your menu today, the wreck, or just a good old-fashioned beating?
I thought today you needed some massage on that lower leg. I don't want those muscles to stiffen up after being in that boot for so long.
Well, that doesn't sound so bad.
Just how deep are you digging this hole? What the heck kind of tree needs this kind of hole?
Jack, like I told you before, this is a fire pit. Joan wants a fire pit back here.
A fire pit? Why the heck do you need one of those? It's just something for the girls to fall into when they're playing.
I'm putting a guardrail around it. Besides, the girls are big enough to know how to avoid it.
Yeah, sure. Famous last words coming from you. You are such a loser.
I hear those two are back at it.
What are you doing to me?
See? I told you that leg was starting to stiffen up. I gotta break up those fibers in there, or you'll limp for the rest of your life.
Yeah, it's nonstop with those two.
Just hold still.
You know, either of those guys...
No, I don't get out this way too often, unless I have a client like yourself. I work out of a small office in Lake Geneva.
Not too far, then.
It looks like that younger guy works hard to keep that lawn looking nice. I think a fire pit would be nice on these fall days. Burning leaves just say fall. It's nice to sit by a fire on a cool, crisp fall evening.
This burning thing just seems strange to me. I remember it when I was a kid growing up in Kenosha, but having been in L.A., for so long, I have all sorts of burning bands. I'm just not used to having a fire on purpose in my backyard.
Yeah, I suppose.
Ugh!
You know, it's a good thing women have the babies. You men can't handle any kind of pain.
Yes, yes. Men would never survive childbirth. Ugh!
You know, I once read in one of those tabloids that some guy dug a fire pit, a real deep one. He killed someone and threw the body into the hole. Put a bunch of wood and stuff in the hole and got rid of the body that way. Cremated it.
With a hole that deep, you'll never be able to see the fire, you idiot. You're gonna need a whole bunch of wood or something to fill this up so you can see that fire.
Yep. Or something.
And so it continued. Other than the daily tortures that Marge inflicted upon me, weekdays were fairly quiet. The occasional fishing boat would come by, but the weekend crowds would disappear by about dinner time on Sunday. Except for one Thursday early evening when I had a visitor show up. I was out back on the upper patio, enjoying a cocktail, when I heard someone calling up to me from below.
Mr. Wells? Oh, Mr. Wells?
Yes?
Mr. Wells, I'm Joan from next door. Cody's wife? Could I come up and pay you a visit?
Of course, I'd be happy for the company.
Oh, Mr. Wells, it is such a treat to meet you. When Cody said it was you who was staying here at Carson's place, I just had to impose on you to at least say hi.
Oh, it certainly is nice of you. Joan was a quiet, attractive, I'd say about 30-something, a brunette. She was wearing it up, looking very professional, wearing glasses, a slim gray skirt, an off-white blouse with a simple bow, a maroon sweater tied loosely around her neck. She wore black flat shoes. Well, not something I like to see on a woman. I prefer to see a woman wearing heels. Always shows their legs so much better. But she pulled it off all the same. Nicely done makeup and just the right amount of expensive jewelry. She walked over and took a chair across from me. I take it you just came from school.
Oh, yes. I drove right up. Didn't even take the time to change. We have an in-service day tomorrow, so I brought the girls up right after school. Cody has the chance to work some overtime this Saturday, but he'll drive up late Saturday afternoon. We just want to take advantage of the lake before the winter sets in.
Would you like something to drink? A glass of wine or a cocktail? After all, you are starting your weekend.
You know, that does sound good. Just tell me where to make it.
Oh, no. My assistant will take care of that. Jeanette, I have a visitor. Could you make her a drink?
Who's here? Oh, of course. What do you like, honey?
A vodka tonic.
Coming right up.
You know, Mr. Wells, I'm glad you're here. I just don't know where to turn, and then you show up and, well, your reputation does precede you.
Well, after all, I am Orson Welles.
Here's your drink, honey. Mr. Wells, another bourbon?
Not right now, Jeanette. Maybe in a bit. How can I help you, Joan?
Well, I'm sure you've heard Jack and my dad arguing.
Yes, but it's really none of my business.
I appreciate that, Mr. Wells, but I'm getting scared all the same, Mr. Wells. Cody's a great guy and does anything and everything he can to make the girls and me happy. My dad, though, he just picks on him for any little thing. Cody doesn't fight back, he just takes it. And I know he's just boiling underneath. Cody can have quite a temper, and I'm just afraid... Well, I'm afraid that...
He could do something kind of harm your father.
It sounds so strange to hear it out loud, but yes. I'm scared that one of them could do harm to the other.
What exactly is the problem between the two men?
Well, it's been going on since Cody and I were in high school. Dad always thought that Cody was blue-collar, not good enough for me. Dad was an executive down in the Loop, and here was a boy dating me that just wanted to work with cars.
There can be a lot of money in that.
Oh, Cody makes a good living.
But not as nice as you do, right?
Well, right, but I do have my master's in education.
And he has a certification from a tech school.
Well, yes.
You know, Joan, I met Cody. He seems like a nice enough guy, a worker, loves you and his girls, and would do anything for you.
But from your father's point of view, I can see where he might think you could have done better.
But
having said that, it would seem that your father would have gotten over this problem he has with your husband by now. It seems like this has been going on for over a decade. Unless there's more.
Actually, the situation did seem to die down after we were married and we had our first baby. Daddy went head over heels with Sadie, and he seemed to forget about Cody. We bought a house, we both had good jobs, we had a little girl and another soon on the way, and things were good.
But then...
Cody lost his job when his dealership closed down during the last recession. It was tough. I still had my job and we were just keeping our heads above water, but Cody just couldn't find a job, try as he might. That was all my dad needed to prove he was right all along. It's been this way ever since. Cody got a decent job.
But not salaried.
Right.
You seem to do okay for yourself, Joan. I can see from your clothes and jewelry that you don't exactly shop with a Kohl's cash.
Well, no. I mean, I do get some money out of a trust from my dad.
A trust? Joan, it seems to me you're feeding this problem. Your father sees you tapping the trust to keep you and your girls in the finest garb, and of course, he thinks your husband is a bum. Tell me, Joan, why are you talking to me? It seems like you should be talking to your husband or your father, or a psychiatrist for that matter. I know that I'm Orson Welles. But I'm just here convalescing. I'll be gone in a few days.
But Mr. Wells, I never took that much money out of the trust. I mean, I do have to look professional in my job, and besides, Daddy locked up. Mr. Wells, the police won't help until something happens, and I need to stop something before it happens. I just thought that maybe you, with your experience at figuring out problems, that you might help me.
I'm not... sure what I can do, Joan. Tell you what, let me think about this, and if I come up with something, I'll get in touch with you. But no promises.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Wells. That's all I can ask for.
Good evening, Joan. That had to be one of the oddest conversations I ever had. Here was a young lady asking me for help, but for nothing specific. She appeared to be happy in her husband and proud of what she did, but she still likes the things her father can provide. Just so strange. It was sort of a balmy night for the autumn, and I had the windows in my bedroom open. I had gone to bed rather early, having been worked to death by Marge. I awoke through some kind of argument outside. The people arguing were trying to keep their voices low, sort of shouting at each other with whispers. Then I heard a car engine start and a car speed off and roar down the road. I got up and limped over to the window overlooking Jack's house, but saw nothing, at least right away. But then I saw someone throwing firewood and leaves into the fire pit, dousing it with starter fluid and lighting the fire. With the flames reaching several feet into the air, I caught a glimpse of the person standing there, but the person was facing away from me and wearing sweatpants and a hoodie. Couldn't get a good idea who it might be. I did notice that Jack's car was in the driveway. When did he get here? The next morning, Jeanette and I were having breakfast.
I'm here.
Sit down. Have some coffee.
Thanks.
Say, Mr. Wells, did you hear that noise last night next door? Now they're arguing in the middle of the night.
What all happened?
Well, I get woken up by this arguing next door. I look outside, and there Jack is there arguing. He's trying to be quiet, but not doing too good of a job at it.
What were he and Cody yelling about this time?
Cody? What makes you think it was Cody?
Well, who else does Jack argue with?
Well, Joan told me that Cody wasn't coming up until later Saturday.
His car is out there now. See?
Did you see the fire?
Yeah. And what was that all about? One minute I hear this argument, and the next, there's a fire in the pit.
Did you see who was filling the pit with wood?
No. The person had sweats on.
Like I was told you once, I read in one of those supermarket rags that once some guy was killed and dumped into a fire pit. It happened someplace out east.
Yikes! You know, I want to go over there and see what's in that fire pit.
I'm not so sure about that.
Oh, what could happen?
Well, it would answer the question if something more than an argument happened.
I don't know. We know Cody's car was there this morning, and then it's gone. He could be back at any moment.
Oh, it won't take me that long to find out what's in that pit. I can run right back here if I see anyone.
Unless he cuts you off before you get back here.
I'm doing it. That's it. You know, I think I should wear one of those full dresses from the 50s when I go over there.
Jeanette, you're no Grace Kelly. Just get over there.
And you're no Jimmy Stewart. You just keep watch and give me some kind of sign if Cody comes back.
Keep it up and you'll be the next one in the fire pit. Grace, Jeanette, crawled through the bushes bordering the two lots and made her way over to the fire pit. Marge and I watched her from the upper patio.
So far, so good. You know, isn't Joan home?
Yes, and hopefully she'll stay busy with her daughters and not look out this way. Jeanette's at the pit.
Is she going to be able to get those logs out of there? Are they still hot?
She'll figure it out. It's the depth of that pit that I'm worried about. Cody had dug it very deep.
Oh, man, she's lying next to the pit, pulling out those logs. Yep, they're charred all right, breaking apart.
And she's having problems reaching down deep enough.
But she's getting down in there. Oh, man, Cody just drove up.
Not to worry yet. He is walking to the house.
Come on, Jeanette.
She's yanking at something. What the...
Cody is coming out of the door. He saw her.
She sees him. Marge, call the sheriff. Quick. She's on her way back here. No. Wait. He's heading her off. Marge!
I called the sheriff. They're on their way.
Cody, how could you? I know Daddy was awful to you, but why did you kill him?
But honey, I didn't.
Sir, we have to go. Let's get in the squad car.
Ma'am, are you sure you're all right?
Yeah, officer. I'm fine. Just shaken up.
Hold on, officer. I think you may have the rest of the wrong man or person.
Say, aren't you Orson Welles?
Why, yes, I'm Orson Welles.
Your mystery-solving reputation precedes you, Mr. Welles. We'd be much obliged for whatever help you can provide.
Thank you, officer. I do what I can.
Oh, brother.
You see, officers, that it may seem that Cody, after all that very public arguing with and belittling by his father-in-law, would be the most likely suspect, but there may be some facts on which you're unaware.
Oh?
Cody didn't arrive until this morning. My guess is a surprise to his family. You see, and correct me if I'm wrong, Joan, your father came up last night, too. You've been wanting to unlock your trust fund, which he locked up, no doubt, to teach you a lesson about Cody. Yes, you may be in love with your husband, but you did become addicted to the lifestyle that your father could afford you. And while living more modestly with your husband's wages seemed romantic at first, you wearied it of all the same. Am I right so far? I'll take that silence as a yes.
Honey? Really?
You always had plenty of opportunity to get rid of your father and inherit the trust, but what to do with his body? You had Cody dig a deep fire pit, after all. He'll do anything for you, and for some reason, fire pits are the current fad. Your father arrived, you put on one of Cody's sweatshirts, picked an argument with your father near the fire pit, which I understand you're quite good at, and when your dad turned around, you knocked him in the head with a shovel. You roll the body into the fire pit, throw logs and leaves into the fire pit along with a substantial amount of accelerant, and try to burn the body. You drive your father's car someplace, who knows where, and walk back. which, by the way, officers, probably means the car isn't too far away. Probably pushed into the lake at the boat landing.
Yes, Mr. Wells.
It all was working out so well, except that the fire wasn't hot enough to completely cremate your father. And, of course, you thought you were too clever by half to evade my sleuthing abilities, which was probably your biggest mistake. Jeanette found some remains. Cody runs out of the house to see what she was doing. You call the sheriff, and, well, there we are.
Honey, is this true?
Oh, Cody.
Ma'am, you're under arrest.
Are you ready to go, Mr. Wells?
Oh, quite ready.
The cab will be here any minute. Marge did a nice job. You're back to walking. Or should I say, waddling.
Oh, dear Jeanette. Sweet Jeanette. Oh, time to leave. Until I pay another visit. After all, I'm Orson Welles.
This has been The Kane Shadow, a Rear Window Murder. The Kane Shadow is created and written by Stephen Brown and Michael Ostrom. Today we broadcasted live from Lake Lawn Resort in Delavan, Wisconsin on Delavan Lake. Starring today were members from the 91.1 Players. Orson Welles was played by John Oleksy. Jeanette was played by Kathy Zolke. Rodney, Cam Spencer. Joan, Alexa Eves. Marge, Janelle Powers. Cody, Larry Rowe. Jack, Siegfried Christoph. Engineer One and Detective One, Todd Eves. Engineer Two and Detective Two, Steve Dundas. The Kane Shadow was directed by Janelle Powers. Today's production crew were Steve Brown, music and recorded sound effects. Barb Tyla, live sound effects. And Troy McDonald, sound engineer. As always, support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of Aaliyah, Dumay, and McTernan, the Lake Lawn Resort in Delavan, Wisconsin, and the Brown Ulstrup Performing Arts Foundation in Salem, Wisconsin. For the WGTD Radio Theater, this is your announcer, Steve Dundas, signing off. Have a great day.
WGTD HD, Kenosha Racine.